Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Finance Simplified, the official podcast for StreetFins. We're here to break down the world of finance for you to understand from a relatable perspective with discussions with experts. This is episode 21, and today I have Alex Patel with me again. How have you been since our last episode?
Hey Rohan, I've been doing well, just got my vaccination.
Yeah, I'll be getting my second shot in like 3 weeks, and I know I'm going to feel bad, but it's all going to be over after that, hopefully.
I'm glad it'll be over soon. But I can't say the same for others, and especially those in India who really need support right now.
Right. And if you listen to our special message, then you'll know that we want to use this podcast to help out as much as possible with those affected in India. If you're listening to this podcast and are based in India and need support, please let us know by emailing us at fspodcast@streetfins.com and tell us about your situation. We'll use our resources and network to help in any way we can.
We also want to remind you to follow us on social media at StreetFins on Twitter and Instagram for updates and to sign up for our newsletter, Finance Simplified, for simplified weekly recaps, finance tips, and updates about the podcast.
So Alex, the topic of today's episode is simplifying high-yield bonds. Why is this such an important topic to know about?
Well, Rohan, investors have a lot of different investments to choose from. They aren't just limited to stocks and can invest in bonds, which are essentially loans to big institutions such as companies and governments. One of the more popular types of bonds are high-yield bonds, which have become an increasingly large share of the bond market, especially during COVID.
Right. High-yield bonds and the types of ideas and investing that accompanies them all are important to understand, as many investors often look to invest in this type of bond. The impact that these bonds have on not only the bond market, but the economy as a whole can definitely be huge.
Understanding high-yield bonds will give you more insight into the fundamental relationship between risk and return, as well as an understanding of the nature of bonds more generally. If you understand high-yield bonds, then you'll be able to understand financial markets much better.
Right, and we'll be making this topic a two-part conversation. So this episode is part one, and we'll be releasing part two in 2 weeks from when this drops. Before we continue, I want to give a shout-out to Akash Naresh for guesting this week's guest. Akash is a systems engineer in Southern California. Akash, great job on figuring out who it was and sending us your guest so quickly. Additionally, we just want to remind you that if you're learning from our episodes and want to keep supporting what we're doing, we'd be eternally grateful if you gave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'd also really love to know what feedback you have for us, so fill out the feedback form in the description to let us know how we're doing and what you would like to see from us going forward. We'll be teasing out the next guest at the end of part two, but this part one episode will go into the basics of high-yield bonds, the history of high-yield bonds, and much more. Our guest is an incredibly successful and highly regarded bond investor who is most well-known for his role as a co-founder of the legendary firm Oaktree Capital. So, let's just get to simplifying. From the minds of the students at StreetFins, this is Finance Simplified, the podcast that simplifies the seemingly complex and confusing world of money. I'm your host, Rohan Gupta. High-yield bonds have been in the financial world for quite some time.
High-yield bonds.
High-yield bonds.
High-yield bonds.
Our guest today is Sheldon Stone, and he's a co-founder of Oaktree Capital, a legendary investment firm known especially for investing in credit. Listeners of the podcast may remember that we had Howard Marks, perhaps the name most associated with Oaktree Capital, on this podcast before. Sheldon co-founded Oaktree Capital alongside Howard and now leads Oaktree's high-yield bond investments, both domestically and globally. His background and career are both so impressive that I think I'll just let him introduce himself.
Sure, absolute pleasure. And I look forward to having the time with the group. So my name is Sheldon Stone. I have had the real honor of being a portfolio manager for high yield bonds for 35 years at the real early stage of the evolution of the high yield bond market. How I got to do it, I would say my path is probably not typical. I was not a econ major in college. I was actually a government major. And after a couple years of work, I concluded that it made sense, given my background, to get an MBA, which I did. And along the way, realized just how much I enjoyed finance and accounting. And the most logical way to advance it was through securities research. And unlike many who went into equity research, I was fortunate enough to find employment in the credit area, which is really not that common of a path. At least it wasn't when I left business school 42 years ago. But fortunately, it was the right path. And along with that experience that I had in private lending allowed me to step into the public markets for high yield debt, which really started more or less concurrently with my finishing my MBA in 1978. So that's a long-winded answer, but that's how I got to where I am today.
Yeah, and I want to get into the basics of bonds. So we know what bonds are, basically loans from investors to companies and governments, but there are different kinds of bonds based on the creditworthiness of the entities that are issuing them. And in this episode, we want to focus on high yield or junk bonds. Could you introduce us to what high yield bonds are?
Sure. So high yield bonds are securities where the rating agencies, and the two largest are Standard & Poor's and Moody's, they determine that the company doesn't have the credit characteristics to be an investment grade rated entity, which means it would be below a triple B rating. And for the audience, ratings go all the way up from triple A all the way down to D. And triple A down to triple B is the investment grade universe, and high yield starts at double B, goes double B, single B, triple C, all the way down to defaults. So what really determines the difference between an investment grade rated company and a high yield or below investment grade rated company is largely the credit metrics, how risky they're deemed to be by the rating agencies. And, you know, we'll talk over this period of some perceptions that are really misunderstood regarding the market. But broadly speaking, these are bonds where the rating agencies have determined they are not of the quality that would categorize them as investment grade rated.
Absolutely. So we know that a company that is lower rated credit-wise would have to issue higher yielding bonds, generally because the risk and return would be sort of proportional. So why do investors choose to purchase these bonds if they're so risky? Now, we do know there's a higher yield, but can you explain your thinking through that?
Sure. Well, there is clearly a higher yield, and they're also less interest rate sensitive. And in a period where rates are rising, it is a real benefit not to have something with a very long duration. I assume you go over duration in subsequent conversations, but suffice it to say, it's the interest rate sensitivity to rate movements. And I think it's risk that is diversifiable. So any particular high yield bond would be deemed risky. But if you can put them into a portfolio where you thoughtfully select the individual securities, you can manage that idiosyncratic risk, that one-off credit risk of a company by establishing a broader sampling. And I think in many ways, the best analogy is to the insurance industry. It would be very risky for any insurance company to only write one insurance policy. How could you possibly manage that risk? So what they do, of course, is they underwrite, which is what high yield investors do through credit research. They diversify, getting a broad sampling, and most importantly, they need to build the right premium. They need to get the right rate. And for us, the rate is, of course, the interest rate or the promised return on the security. So I think it's misunderstood when people say they're risky. Clearly, they have risk, but if you can do a good job of determining what are fundamentally strong businesses, arguably not as mature or large as others, or not having quite the credit metrics, you can get compensated very generously. And I think that was really kind of the brilliance that occurred in the late 70s by Michael Milken, recognizing that you could manage this risk, you could diversify the risk.
I think it's important to note high yield bonds have shorter maturities than, say, treasury bonds. One reason for that is due to the risk that the entities issuing these high-yield bonds carry. As we talked about, high-yield bonds pay a higher yield to compensate for the issuer's lower creditworthiness. This means that the issuer typically won't want to issue bonds that have a larger maturity because the issuer, being in a less financially stable condition, may not stick around long enough to pay those mature bonds. And if the company does stick around, then it likely has achieved the stability and creditworthiness to no longer be considered high yield and instead improve to an investment grade rating. Now over to Rohan, who will talk about the history of high yield bonds.
Right. So we've gone just now through the basics of high yield bonds. We've just established why they're high yield due to creditworthiness. And, you know, nowadays, throughout this pandemic, we've seen quite a few, more than a few, in fact, quite a lot of businesses, both small businesses and public companies. Many of them have entered sort of that distressed area because of lost business due to the pandemic. And this next section of questions is mainly about putting these high yield bonds in a historical context. And you just mentioned Michael Milken, and we'll get to him in a sec. But I'm actually curious, you know, when we first spoke, you told us the story of the first kind of high yield bond sold. So do you mind going over that and kind of talking about the beginnings of, or at least when that first concept was first introduced?
So I would say high yield bonds go back a long, long time. Sometimes when you think of them, they're really designed to provide capital to companies or institutions that are in need of the capital. Ironically, investment grade rated companies don't really need the capital, but high yield companies or high yield entities do. And I think what you're referring to is my comment that the first high yield bond that was issued in America was actually done at the time of the Revolutionary War. And it was bonds that were revolutionary bonds that were sold to France. The US would not have had an investment grade rating. Clearly, here is this nascent entity, this country that is being organized and ultimately needed capital to fight its Revolutionary War. Along the way, the French, who concluded that they wanted to support the American Revolution, were buyers of those bonds. And that's a really unusual history. But even before that, there always has been a period where investors were willing to accept risk in order to get higher returns. This had a political aspect to it, given the long history between the French and the British. But I cited it as an example of something that I don't think is always kind of intuitive to people, that it's gone back a long, long time, getting compensated with larger returns to offset greater risk.
Yeah, and I mean, that's one of the foundational ideas in finance is, you know, you should be compensated for the risk you take. And that's something you should achieve with all the opportunities you look at and invest in. And just another comment is it's kind of fascinating just that without, you know, this high, I mean, it probably wasn't called high yield back then, obviously, but sure, the idea of lending to this nascent country and seeing how America probably may have not been able to wage that war without those funds. So just seeing those historical applications of high yield or just finance in general to something that's not just a company, but an entire country. So moving on to sort of the modern sense of these high yield bonds, you mentioned a guy named Michael Milken, and he was, I think he's considered to be kind of the father, the pioneer of the high yield junk bond market. So could you talk a little bit about how high yield bonds developed and how he helped them develop in sort of the modern sense?
Sure. So there always were bonds that were deemed riskier, but there typically were not new issue bonds that are riskier. There were always companies that faced difficult times, whether it was the sector that they were in, where there was a downturn. And investors historically did well buying securities, established bonds at deep discounts from companies that lost their investment grade rating. Milken had the epiphany that you could do new issue high yield rather than just going in and finding the companies that had been downgraded. You could actually establish a new issue market for below investment grade rated companies that would be first time issuers. And it was a smart idea. I mean, I would say it was a brilliant idea because along the way, what had always been common in equities which is you can compensate for the risk. Small cap companies have to offer higher potential returns than large companies that have deeply traded and well-known equities. But he put it to the credit market, and the timing was perfect because there was a willingness of investors to follow what was referred to as the prudent man rule, saying, would a prudent man buy a security if the risk was greater and he was offered a lot more promised return? And that ruling was something that dates back probably at this point pretty close to 45 years. And that helped evolve the institutional market, the pension plan market for high yield, because it was no longer said you can't buy a security because it's below investment grade rated. It said if a prudent man would do it, then it's fine for institutions to buy below investment grade or high yield debt. And that was really a big change that occurred. And I'll add one other observation, which I think has been fascinating to me, is there were whole industries that evolved from the high yield bond market, like the cable TV industry, like the cellular phone industry, like the gaming industry. Atlantic City and Las Vegas, they were major issuers of high yield bonds because they didn't have strong ratings at the time. They had a need for capital and they paid dearly for it. Coupons were high. So I think what you saw that evolved from Milken is not only were there institutional investors who had the ability now to buy credit risk, but there were whole industries that were beyond what banks would lend to. And that, to me, was the brilliance of it and what allowed this market to grow dramatically.
Yeah, and you were mentioning these industries that were able to issue these high-yield bonds and grow. And I think with Michael Milken and his contribution, he really made the high-yield bonds sort of an asset class that many institutional investors actually would consider putting in their portfolio, as opposed to this sort of side effect of the market downgrading certain companies' debt. And one sort of other, I guess, invention that came out of this was distressed debts. Whereas, you know, high yield bonds, they're for companies that are less credit worthy, but they're not quite at that level of bankruptcy or facing kind of existential threat. But then distressed debt, and this is where Oaktree Capital comes in, they were kind of one of the first firms to, I think, one of the first major distressed debt firms. So I read, you know, earlier that Oaktree had a lot of involvement with Michael Milken. So I was wondering if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. So we were, before we formed Oaktree, so Oaktree is 25 years old. In the late 70s and early 80s, my partner, Howard Marks, moved over to the credit side of the business and was involved in some of the early deals, an institutional investor buying some of the early high yield bonds that Michael Milken and Drexel Burnham underwrote. As you would imagine, not every company is going to survive. And distressed debt really took into account the fact that the world changes, companies are not managed as well as you might have anticipated. The balance sheet has more financial leverage than would be prudent. And there are going to be companies that are going to have financial difficulties. The realization that we had, and this goes back 1987, so 34 years ago, was a very simple one. And that is, there's a price where you would buy a distressed security with the expectation that you would convert the debt into stock and take ownership of the company, and in many ways, create an equity portfolio that was nominally a debt instrument. In other words, deleveraging. And that idea came into being when I was early in my career and I would buy a security and things wouldn't go the way I anticipated. And let's say the bond went to 50 and I would work real hard and maybe be able to get another 20 or 30 points. So maybe I got the bond back up to 70 or 80 cents of value. And I still had an awful experience because I still lost 20 to 30% of my money, having bought it at par and having it gone down to 70 or 80, even though it went as low as 50 at a low point. Then the realization came in to being, which is, it would be a very different story if you bought the bonds at 50. Then you had the potential to earn, 40 to 60% returns. And if you could do that in a year or two by restructuring, that would be a very positive return. And that's really the genesis of investing in distressed securities. It is a deleveraging, and it's putting a company back to a balance sheet that would be very equity-oriented as opposed to having a debt-heavy balance sheet.
Gotcha, yeah. All right, so we had the Revolutionary War. That's where high-yield bonds were kind of foundational for America. Then we had Michael Milken really kind of taking it to the next level. Now, another event that I think was pretty important when talking about high-yield bonds and really finance in general was the financial crisis of 2008. And so I know that Oaktree had its own sort of game plan when it invested in 2008, especially with distressed debt. But when you apply to high yield, I mean, what were your thoughts on how the financial crisis of 2008 affected the market for high yield bonds and just the nature of the high yield bond market in general?
Sure. Well, you know, every market has a period where there's some crisis. By far the largest crisis that occurred in the high yield bond market was actually when Drexel Burnham went bankrupt and Michael Milken went to prison. That was really an existential risk. And that was in the late 80s. People questioned whether the high yield market would ever survive that. And it obviously did. Otherwise, we wouldn't be talking today about the high yield market. And then you had the TMT meltdown in 2000. And then in 08, you had the global credit crisis. This had very little to do with high yield. This was primarily a mortgage market issue, subprime mortgages, but there was a contagion. All risk-bearing assets really felt the shock of it, and it put a tremendous amount of pressure on the high yield market. Security prices gapped down, and it was one of the greatest periods for distressed investing. And ironically, it was among the best periods of relative performance that I've ever had. Normally, with bonds, you don't expect there's going to be a wide divergence between the promised return and the actual return. But when everything really went into the downward spiral of the credit crisis, the things that went down the most were by far the riskiest bonds. And that isn't something that I was looking to buy. So along the way, we ended up enjoying, relatively speaking, a far superior performance, but still with brackets around the returns, still negative. So the financial crisis was really a difficult period for equities, for all asset categories. Fortunately, the actions that were taken, both monetary and fiscal, allowed the market to stabilize. And what we've seen since has really been more business as usual than quite that shock.
Right. And when we're talking about the crisis, and you just mentioned it wasn't as much high yield as it was the mortgage market, but I still think that you see the idea of high yield applied to other kinds of debt financing in the subprime mortgages going from like investment grade to subprime, as well as like all these other instruments that were just going further and further out on the risk curve and kind of reducing the amount of return available for every kind of incremental unit of risk you were taking. And so we've established sort of that part of the financial crisis. Now let's talk about now. So during this COVID-19 pandemic, we've seen a whole lot of businesses lose money and their public debt, or even on their private markets, their debt becomes a lot cheaper because it's more distressed. So what do you see as the nature of the high yield bond market today?
Yeah, sure. So if you look back last year, if you look at, you know, end of February and March, you saw a real shock occur in the markets. Companies where you said they look like they're really analyzable and they've got a steady cash flow. Some industries really got pummeled. And the question was, would they live another day? And you think of the most logical ones are some of the travel and leisure companies. You think of the restaurant sector. Anything where it was primarily discretionary and client-facing was impacted. What happened, which I think, again, was a smart move by the Federal Reserve, was they had made it clear that they would support the fallen angels, the downgraded companies from investment grade. And while they didn't need to do a lot of it, just providing that comfort was enough to create stability in the market. And all of a sudden, you had a significant new issue volume that occurred. Many of them were secured bonds, which are not typical. Normally, high yield bonds are unsecured. But when they needed money, they had the ability to issue secured debt, and there were active buyers for it. So the pandemic was really amazing. Its impact was relatively short. If you were Rip Van Winkle and you went to sleep at the end of 2019 and woke up at the end of 2020, you would say it was an average year. The market was up 5 or 6%. That wasn't very different from the coupon. But what happened in Q1, particularly the latter part of Q1, the market went under tremendous pressure because of the uncertainty of the pandemic and whether companies would be resilient to survive. What we know happened was the markets opened up, and all of a sudden you saw a meaningful amount of new issue, deals being raised to provide sufficient liquidity to make sure these companies would have a lengthy period to recover once the pandemic came to an end. And so it has a happy ending. Obviously, the vaccines made a massive difference, and now we just need to get to the other side. But the market, which was under a lot of pressure end of February and early March, pretty much has been marching back up to a very positive return for the year. So again, I think no one would have expected this kind of a snapback if they looked at it in the middle of February or latter part of February.
Right. And just to date this podcast, we're recording this on January 8th. So, I mean, by the time we release this, there's probably going to be more news on the vaccine and the rollout of it. And, you know, just a funny kind of story I have about the kind of high yield bonds due to the pandemic was I was reading a lot about these debt restructurings that were going on because the uncertainty has forced a lot of the distressed, like movie theaters and restaurants, a lot of them to kind of restructure their bonds on the market. And there's this interesting one that came up where it was AMC, their bonds were trading for 30 cents on the dollar. And, you know, they were coming out with this proposal to its investors that they would replace those bonds with bonds that were trading for 50 cents on the dollar. So 30 to 50 cents and at a higher interest rate. So I read into that proposal, I think it was on Bloomberg, but when I read that, I was like, this seems like a good deal. And I actually put a little bit of money into that proposal. And then I later realized, and this is just kind of my mistake, but I've learned from it, was it was only available to institutions and not retail investors. And I had a really funny experience of calling up in like the investment banker at Moelis, who was in charge of that deal. And it was an interesting process, but it also gave insight into like, you know, there's a lot of activity going on with not just high yield, but just debt in general, in terms of restructuring. And so I just wanted to add that funny little anecdote there. My next question is, you know, you were talking a little bit about the Fed and its sort of stimulus in the pandemic market. So what kind of impact has the Fed had on just high yield bonds with its lowering of interest rates?
Sure. Well, I think it's created more of an appetite for risk. You've seen it in the equity market as well. When interest rates are so low, investors, whether they're individuals like you and me, or whether they're institutional investors who have pension obligations, can't survive buying securities that have low interest rates, like investment grade rated or treasuries. So it does encourage investors to step out and take more risk. And that, I think, is one of the reasons why I mentioned the second half of 2020 saw a tremendous recovery. Actually, starting from the early part of Q2, saw a tremendous recovery. And that's just because the Fed instilled more confidence that they were not going to sit idly by and let the markets come undone, and two, the absolute need of investors for return. So hopefully that puts it in some context.
Hey everyone, that was the end of part one of our two-part interview with Sheldon Stone on simplifying high-yield bonds. We'll be releasing part two of our interview in about 2 weeks from when this releases. But the first half of the conversation was absolutely incredible. Alex, what were some of the key takeaways from this first part?
I think one takeaway is that due to the dynamics of bonds, high-yield bonds are high-yield to offer incentives to investors to make up for less creditworthiness, meaning more risk. It goes back to the fundamental relationship between the risk of an investment and the return it needs to offer. And with high-yield bonds, like any other risky investment, the most reliable way to ensure you get a return is to diversify. And high-yield bonds are also unique in that they don't necessarily follow the same dynamics as a more highly rated investment-grade government or corporate bond.
Exactly. High-yield bonds typically have a shorter duration, which ties back to their risk, and are more related to changes in the condition of the company or entity that issues them as opposed to the broader macroeconomic interest rate environment dictated by the Federal Reserve or other central banks. While bonds like U.S. Treasuries and stable corporate bonds fall in price as interest rates rise, high-yield bonds are less tied to that dynamic than higher-rated bonds.
Yeah, and when you look at the history of high-yield bonds, you really see that this concept of investing in riskier things in hopes of a larger return goes back a long time. And then through Michael Milken, high-yield bonds became a fundraising option for companies that needed funding because they could actually issue them to find investors. And when we come to today, especially during the COVID-19 pandemic, we really see what a staple the high-yield bond market has become in the financial markets.
Agreed. Well, Alex, that wraps up our part one conversation and takeaways. What can we expect from part two?
We'll be talking more about high-yield bond investing attitudes and approaches, learning about the risks associated with high-yield bonds, the nature of different high-yield bond markets, Sheldon's Create Oaktree, and much more.
Part two will be dropping on May 15th, which is 2 weeks from now. We'll talk to you all then. Hey guys, I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. It truly means the world to us. If you like this episode and others, let us know by subscribing and giving us 5 stars on Apple Podcasts and following us on Spotify. Share us with your friends and check us out on Instagram and Twitter, both at StreetFins. You can also follow me on Twitter at RohanInvest. If you'd like to get in touch with us, please email fspodcast@streetfins.com. Thanks once again to Sheldon Stone for his insights today. I hope you understand the topic of high-yield bonds in a more simplified way. Once again, we're really happy that you're taking the initiative to learn finance and to better your future. If you haven't already, we highly encourage you to check out streetfins.com for articles, videos, and other content. Join the StreetFins community and tell your friends about us so that they can learn about finance too. We'll talk to you next time on Finance Simplified.